Accession number 18774, Real 1.
Tony Southers, Real 1. Where were you born, please?
I was born in Marseille, France, in December 1922. And my parents were Yorkshire.
How did your Yorkshire parents come to be in Marseilles?
My father was with Lodge's Register of Shipping as an engineer surveyor, having been at sea all his life and having been in the Navy during the 1418 War, where he was an engineer lieutenant in destroyers.
And I think you were telling me your family origins were in northeast Yorkshire.
Yes, my father was born in Whitby, and my mother was born in Redcar, Yorkshire.
Where did you have your schooling?
My schooling, I left France, Marseille, age 2, and the family moved to Glasgow. And I went to school at Kelvinside Academy, Glasgow, where I left, aged 16, and moved down to England, to Hoylake, where I now am.
When and how did you finish your education?
I finished my education at Kelvinside Academy in December when I was 16. I don't know what year that was, 1938, and came down to Hoylake having taken a higher school certificate, leaving certificate at Kelvinside. And I came down to this part of the world and wanted to go to sea. And in fact, I opted to go into the office of the New Zealand Shipping Company in Liverpool. And from the office, I tried to go to sea, but I hadn't got the qualifications required, i.e. I should have gone to either Pangbourne or Conway. But in fact, I hadn't been to either, so I wasn't accepted. And of course, at that stage, the war clouds were looming. And so I carried on in the office, virtually as an office boy, until I was 17 and a half when I volunteered for the Navy.
Where were you and what were you doing when Chamberlain declared war on Germany?
I was in the office as an office boy, learning my trade in the outward freight section of the office. And I must admit, at that stage, I was 17, and I really was rather thrilled at the idea of going to war. Like many at the time, younger people, it all seemed to be a great game that we were going to play, and we were all going to be heroes, but in actual fact, of course, it didn't turn out like that in the end. Although I have to say that on reflection and looking back at during the war, I have no complaints, and really, I honestly enjoyed the war from my point of view, because I loved the sea and ships.
What was the reaction to the war outbreak of your parents?
I was one of three brothers, and they accepted it when I said I wanted to join the Navy and go away, because my eldest brother was already at sea in the merchant service with Brockebank Line as an engineer, and my other brother was a naval architect with Camel Laird & Co., and he intended joining the Air Force. So that when my time came, and I was the youngest brother, I volunteered as soon as I possibly could. And my parents didn't want me to go at first, and then realized it was inevitable that I would go sooner or later. And rather than wait for conscription or whatever was going to happen in the future, they let me go to where I wanted to go, which was to sea. And so I joined the Navy instead of joining the merchant service.
When did you join the Navy?
I joined the Navy in January 1941, and I went to sea at the end of February 1941 as an ordinary seaman.
Before you joined the Navy, had you been in any bombing of England by the German Air
Force? Oh, we'd been bombed very badly in Liverpool, and at the time I used to have to take the post from the office to the general post office in the middle of Liverpool And frequently there were air raids because we worked right through to 9:30. And at that stage I was getting a little bit frightened, I must admit. And I used to catch the train home during the bombing, and of course the trains would stop whilst it all went on. And Liverpool was very badly bombed.
What was the address of your place of work?
The address of my place of work was New Zealand House, 18 Water Street, Liverpool. So that it was really in the centre of Liverpool, and we did have fire watchers who used to stay every night. But I wasn't old enough, they didn't consider, so it was the older men who did the fire watching. And in fact, they did put out some incendiary bombs. The office, in fact, was never burnt down.
Did many bombs fall in or around Water Street?
Oh, lots of bombs fell in and around Water Street. And St. Nicholas Church, which is the sailors' church at Pierhead, was hit and put on fire. I don't think it burnt out completely, but it was badly burnt. And many bombs were landed in and around, but mainly into the centre of Liverpool itself. And I've got a book on that, which I could show you any time.
How did public morale stand up to the bombing?
Oh, perfectly well. I think somehow or other all the people, and as I say, I was young and inexperienced and for some reason not the least bit frightened. And the older people who knew what it was all about, I never heard any of them ever complaining, and I never heard of them saying that they were frightened. It seemed that it was something that they expected and accepted when it came. When Liverpool was finally almost flattened, the centre of it, it was in a very bad way, but I still never heard anyone complaining.
What was your own address in Hoylake?
I lived at 152 Mel's Promenade, spelled M-E-O-L-S, Promenade, Hoylake. And one or two bombs fell in the Mel's area, but not very many. And I think it generally that was the bombers jettisoning their loads rather than bombing Mel's. There was nothing to bomb in Mel's worth bombing. It was just a civilian occupation place. There was no factories or anything there.
What was the attitude towards the Germans at that stage of the war?
We hated them. And I can remember my father in particular, who'd already gone through the 1418 war and had a fairly bad time in destroyers. And I remember he particularly detested all that was going on, and when he saw the damage the bombs were doing, he was very angry, and so was Mother. And I think all of us learnt, possibly through propaganda, possibly not, but we all had a distinct dislike of the Germans, and we blamed them entirely for the war and what happened. Now, it may be that, having hindsight on that, it may be that we were wrong. But I think now, on reflection, they were probably forced into the war by Hitler. But Hitler, of course, was a hated name, and because he was a hated name, all the Germans were hated. I had no compunction about going to war and killing Germans. Because I didn't have to physically do it.
How did you go about joining up?
I went and volunteered at Renshaw Street in Liverpool when I was 17 and a half, and they said I was too young and I could not go before I was 18, which was in 6 months' time. And so I joined up at Renshaw Hall, where I had a medical, and then they sent me home to await instructions, which came about a fortnight later, and they told me to go to HMS Collingwood for training, and I joined a train on a set date at Liverpool Lime Street with several other fellows who were going to the same place, and that's how my training started. I trained as an ordnance. HMS Collingwood is at Fareham in Hants, outside Portsmouth, and there again we were bombed fairly frequently. But we spent most of the nights sleeping in air raid shelters in HMS Collingwood.
Can you tell me about the training there, please?
Well, the training was only, I think it was a 3-week period. of training, and because I'd done quite a bit of sailing prior to this at school and so on and so forth, I found that parts of the training were very simple. The knots and splices and things like that I had already done. And because I was keen, I thoroughly enjoyed it. But also in my class, there were 24, there were four school teachers, all of whom were highly switched on fellows, but all of whom thought, and I remember them, the opinion was that the Germans would win the war, and this used to horrify me. And all of them, when they left HMS Collingwood, were recommended for commissions. What happened to them when they left, I don't know.
Did that 3 weeks do you much good?
That 3 weeks, I suppose, taught me to become, changed from a growing up young man to a man. Like, because not only did you have to learn to be a sailor, you had to get out during the air raids. And I remember distinctly seeing a barrage balloon being shot down in flames, which landed very close to the camp, and thinking, we really are at war. And I was learning what it was all about. And all the time looking forward to going to sea. So that when I finished at HMS Collingwood, I was sent to Portsmouth Barracks to await a ship, and that's where I joined my first ship.
What was it like in Portsmouth Barracks?
Portsmouth was being bombed as well, of course, and a lot of it was in a bad way. But it was a very busy port from naval point of view, and we used to be sent down from the barracks to various ships. I remember hanging over the side of HMS Vimy, a destroyer, chipping paintwork, and that was my work for about a week. And then my draft ship came through, sending me back up to Greenock to join an armed merchant cruiser to take me to Halifax, Nova Scotia, to join another armed merchant cruiser.
Which?
And that's what I did.
Which armed merchant cruiser took you across the Atlantic?
I went over on a ship called the California, which was an ex-anchor line vessel, and of about 14,000 tons, and she had 8 6-inch guns, very ancient old guns, 1904, if I remember rightly. Because I was stuck as one of the 6-inch guns crew temporarily. And also I was sent as a masthead lookout. And I can remember climbing the ratlins and stepping across into the crow's nest with the ship rolling horribly. Well, it seemed to be rolling horribly to me on that first voyage. And every time I looked down from the crow's nest, I looked at the sea and not the ship, and felt violently ill. And anyway, I did carry out my watch there, and I can always remember coming back off watch and joining the 6-inch guns crew, who were terribly kind to me. Three of them, I think it was three of them, were Nova Scotians. And they saw to it that I was all right, although I was feeling very ill. They were very kind to me and very good to me. And I think a camaraderie then and there started, and I realized what a good lot of chaps I was with. That may sound a little bit corny now, but on reflection, they were very good indeed, and they looked after their own kind.
What were they able to do for you?
Well, what they used to do for instance, I didn't have a duffel coat, and I can remember the captain of the guns crew lending me his duffel coat, because we had to spend 4 hours sitting on the deck beside the 6-inch guns. Although there was shelter there from the gun shields and all the rest of it, it was still very cold crossing the Atlantic to Halifax. And we were with a convoy, and they explained everything to me and bought me a cup of tea when they had a cup of tea. And they didn't ask me to do anything other than my watch and my duties. And so I thought they were a very good crowd to be with. And I learned then and there. I also learned then and there, as a rating, that we didn't like officers. And at first I thought this was pretty bad, and then I realized afterwards that I don't suppose anyone at the beginning liked any form of authority over them, and you had to do as you were told when you were told. And I soon got used to it.
And this was in February 41?
That was in February 41, yes. I got to Canada, Halifax, and I was transferred from California to a ship called the Aurania, A-U-R-A-N-I-A, which was a Cunard liner. And it was another armed merchant cruiser. And this one, I was told I was taking passage on this to go to Iceland, Reykjavik in Iceland, to join my proper ship, which was HMS Ascania, A-S-C-A-N-I-A, another Cunard liner, and that was to be my permanent ship. Anyway, we sailed from Halifax in the Urania, and I don't know how or when it happened, but I was asleep during the whole performance, but apparently we struck a very small iceberg, and we returned to Halifax, Nova Scotia, with a slight dent in the bows, no really great trouble, and waited there until the Ascania came in from her convoy to Iceland, and then I joined the Ascania.
What kind of ship was the
HMS Ascania? Was another armed merchant cruiser. She had 8 6-inch guns, all very old, and the idea was that we sailed with convoys on the North Atlantic and up into the Denmark Strait and up to Iceland, and then as far south as Trinidad. So we went from freezing cold in Iceland to boiling hot in Trinidad. But the convoy side of life I found most interesting, and also I learned then, at that stage in my seagoing in the Navy, how appalling the weather could be. And I think the weather was the main thing that I recall throughout the war as being horrific, in the North Atlantic in particular.
What were the characteristics of North Atlantic weather?
Well, the characteristics of the North Atlantic run were that we would join a convoy, and the speed of a convoy, a slow convoy, was 6.5-7 knots, and the speed of a fast convoy was about 9-10 knots. Now that's about 12 miles an hour for a fast one and about 8 miles an hour for a slow convoy, and you've got to cross the Atlantic at that speed. The speed of the convoy is the speed of the slowest ship. But of course, once you ran into a North Atlantic gale and you had it on the bows, you were slowed right down to 3 and 4 knots, and at some times we even were stopped, and ships of the convoy were disappearing like leaves off a tree, disappearing, blown away, particularly if they were in ballast. And our job was to stay in the middle of the convoy, and if, and thank goodness it never happened, we met a raider, it was our job to take on the raider and protect the convoy. And that did happen to several armed merchant cruisers with disastrous results, but in many cases they did save the convoy.
When you say disappear, you mean they were lost sight of?
They were lost sight of when I say disappear. They weren't sunk. Some of them could have been sunk later on, because it is impossible to tell what happened, because I hadn't access to what happened to them. I just was a 6-inch guns crew and a lookout, and that was my job. No doubt the captain and the officers knew what had happened to the stragglers. But later on I learned what did happen to stragglers, and it invariably it was disastrous.
What were living conditions like for you in the ship?
Well, living conditions in the armed merchant cruiser were very good indeed. Inasmuch as we had hammocks, and the hammocks were slung on the North Atlantic run, my hammock was slung very close to the engine room. So although the smell was pretty foul coming out of the engine room, it was warm. So that when I turned in, I was warm. The chaps at the other end of the line, they were cold. But you didn't change. Once you were at sea, you never took. There weren't anything so fanciful as pajamas. We'd just take our jersey off and climb into your hammock and go to sleep, because you were doing 4 on and 8 off at the time. But if you were in an action area, you were doing 4 on and 4 off. And at dawn every morning, you did dawn action stations. You had dawn action stations because dawn, when the first light appears over the horizon, is when you may see an enemy vessel over the horizon. Or you may even be lucky enough to sight a U-boat, which I never did in our merchant cruisers. But all ships had dawn action stations. And so if you went to bed at 4 o'clock in the morning and dawn was 5, you're up again at 5 to go stand by the gun just in case. And then as soon as it was clear, the horizon was clear, we'd turn, go back to bed again.
Sounds as though dawn action stations weren't the most popular duty.
It wasn't the most popular duty, not at all. But it was an essential part of the program of sailing and manning and fighting a warship. You had to, if dawn came up and there on the horizon was an enemy vessel and you were all still turned in, you'd look a bit stupid. So I think everyone accepted that this had to be done, although it was tiring and unpopular.
Did you have dusk action stations as well?
No, because at dusk we could see what was going. There was always someone on the bridge, so we didn't have the same problem.
Did the officers in this armed merchant cruiser deserve their poor reputation amongst the ratings?
Of course not. No, it's a bit like there are popular policemen and unpopular policemen today, although I'm one of those who thinks that the police are great people and you go to them when you want help. And it was the same at sea in many ways. You went to the officers when you wanted help or advice. Oh, no, there was nothing really radically wrong with... There were some officers who weren't so very popular, but in general, they were good. And most of the officers in our merchant cruisers were R&R officers who'd been in those sort of ships all their lives. But the captains and the commanders were invariably RN officers. Some of them had been retired and brought back. And they were very good.
Did you ever approach an officer for help and advice yourself?
I don't think I ever did come to an officer for advice or help. When one says that, we did, the ordinary seamen, did daily classes to learn to qualify to be able seamen. And then when you were an able seaman, you carried on with more classes to become a leading seaman. And it was the officers who taught you, the officers and petty officers. So they, in fact, taught you, and they took you for your exams. But apart from that, I had very little contact with officers. I just did as I was told and scrubbed the decks mainly.
What were the classes like?
Classes were interesting to me because you were always learning something, and if you weren't in classes and you were off duty, in other words, you weren't keeping a watch, then the morning used to be spent scrubbing down the decks and holly-stoning decks and washing paintwork and chipping paintwork and doing all that. In other words, a bit like housework, the ship had to be kept tidy and run efficiently. But if you were in a class, you missed all that. You just sat in a class and learnt all about ropes and anchors and boats and a variety of fairly interesting subjects, if you were interested in the sea. If you weren't interested in the sea, then and ships and what was going on and were more interested in being a bank clerk or something, then presumably you just sat and put up with it. But even that was better than chipping paintwork.
What was holy stone?
Holy stone is a rough piece of, it looks like cement, and it's about a foot square by 8 foot across by about 6 inches thick, and it's on a long stake of wood, and you put what's called suji muji on the deck, which was a hot bucket full of water and soft soap mixed, and sand, and you used to scatter that across the wooden decks and then holy stone to and fro until the decks came up beautifully in white. And they really did look quite beautiful, and of course they were ex-passenger ships, they were kept that way.
Suji Muji?
That's what I called it. How you spell it, I would think, is something like Suji Muji. And it's called Suji Muji.
Is that just your name or a
comment? No, that was because we used to go to the bosun store to draw a bucket full of Suji Muji. The bosun was a petty officer in the ship who looked after all the paint and all the ship's husbandry, all the bits and pieces of rope and spun yarn and so on. And he had what was known as the bosun's locker, which was in fact a little room about 8 foot square. And he issued all the paint and paintbrushes and scrapers and and had a wonderful smell of tarred hemp.
Can you tell me more about the duties that you were doing with the Ascania?
Well, my duties with the Ascania, I was an ordinary seaman, first of all, and then the ship was sent from the North Atlantic in 1941. We went home at the end of 41 to Southampton, where we dry docked, and I was sent on 7 days' leave. I didn't know it at the time, but we were bound for the Far East. And my duties were changed from being, once I qualified as an ordinary seaman, became a naval seaman, and then I was put in the gunnery office, where I passed the information to the gun crews as to the various exercises that had to be carried out as we went along, such as range, bearing, and so on of a potential enemy. And always you had to prefix, unless it was the real thing and you were really going into action, the orders always used to be for exercise, train on a bearing of green 2-0, deflection 4-left or whatever, but you always had to say for exercise, and if you didn't say for exercise, then the guns would load up with a 6-inch shell, which was no good thing if you'd made a horrible mistake and were training on one of your own ships. Fortunately, that never happened, but that was my new job in the office, and it was very pleasant in there, warm and comfortable whenever we closed up for action stations, and it was in the centre of the ship. Well, we then went out via South Africa to Australia, and from Australia to New Zealand.
This is in the Ascania?
This is in the Ascania, and we got to Fremantle, Australia, after about 28 days steaming via Cape of Good Hope. Port Elizabeth we stopped at. Stopped at Mauritius for fuel, and then went on to Fremantle, Australia, where I met my first Australians. We didn't seem to be regarded as heroes out there because they thought we'd rather left them to it. But anyway, we went from there to Sydney, and Sydney across to Auckland, New Zealand.
What date is this about?
This is in 42, early 42. Well, when I got to New Zealand, I was an able seaman, and we then proceeded to go up to what was known as the Island Run, and we went up to Noumea, Fiji, Bora Bora, generally supposedly chasing raiders. We did this for two voyages of about 3 weeks each. And I came home and I was transferred to the New Zealand Navy, whether I liked it or not. About 30 of us from Ascania were transferred to the New Zealand Navy and were sent to another armed merchant cruiser, HMNZS Monowai, M-O-N-O-W-A-I. And the Ascania was sent home to be converted to a troop ship.
Presumably, it sounds as though you didn't run into any raiders then.
We didn't meet any raiders, and if we had, we couldn't have caught them, because, quite frankly, on reflection, we had a maximum speed of 14 knots, and the German raiders were much faster ships than that. So it could have been interesting if we'd been able to have a go, but I doubt if we could have caught them. In fact, it might have been a blessing in disguise that we didn't.
So you had a period. You started a period with the New Zealand Navy.
I then started with the New Zealand Navy.
What were they like?
They were great. They were a lovely crowd of fellas. I was in a cabin called the Jungle, with no less than 20 sailors in it, ex-farmers, sheep shearers, everything you like. And again, there was a great camaraderie. The Monowai was a much faster ship, ex-passenger ship. We could do about 18, 20 knots in her. And again, we went chasing raiders, and that took us right up towards the New Hebrides and the Solomons. And we saw some pretty severe damage to American cruisers and ships coming in there from the war up there.